step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
VGW Group, no purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions, 18 plus.
Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Parent Factors with your host, Dr. John DeGarmo. Today, families are a lot different than they were in the past. So whether you have one child or you're part of a blended family, you can depend on Dr. John for weekly insights, answers, tips, and solutions. Now, the world of parenting is right at your fingertips. Here's Dr. John.
Hi, welcome to Parent Factors with Dr. John. Has suicide affected your family in some fashion? I would imagine so. You know, all families in some way are touched by suicide. I was just speaking to a friend of mine this very day, and she was telling me that a friend of hers had committed suicide this past weekend. It's something that is that can destroy a family. Our special guest this week, Carl David, is going to be talking to us about his brand new book, Batterfield. Carl is a world renowned art collector, art dealer from the great state of Pennsylvania. And he's going to give us some insight. Carl, welcome to the program this week.
Thank you, Dr. John. Appreciate being here tonight.
Well, my pleasure. So, Carl, you've got a pretty gripping book, Batterfield, How My Family Survived Suicide. Carl, would you agree in my opening statement that all families are somehow affected by suicide?
I think you're absolutely correct. This is an event that is just so pervasive in the world. Everybody knows somebody, even if it hasn't happened in their family, everybody knows someone whose family member took their life, or friend took their life. I mean, it's just more than 1 million people a year take their life worldwide. And that's an epidemic statistic. It's crazy.
A million people. That is incredible. So your recent book, it began as a memoir, Carl. You began writing it as a memoir, an homage to your father, if you will. But you said it became much more important. It became much more important work. First of all, tell us about your relationship with your father and the relationship with your brother who died. How did this all come together?
Well, I was 16 when my brother took his life. We didn't see it coming. We had no clue. We still don't know why. I mean, there's no visible reason. And it really wouldn't make much difference because it wouldn't bring him back. But we were a very close-knit family growing up in the 1960s, kind of your all-American idyllic family. I mean, we had my parents who were amazing role models. They were phenomenal people. And my father was my mentor, my hero. He was everything to me. So after my brother took his life, I knew at some point down the road I wanted to write a book. This also 8 years later, my dad passed away. I think he internalized the whole event and just felt responsible, I guess, as any parent would. And I needed to memorialize him. We didn't have kids yet. And I wanted to make sure that the world, as well as my own family, knew how intense my feelings were for my father and how amazing our relationship was. And I wrote it thinking that this would help somebody who didn't have that kind of stellar relationship with their family, with their father. And so that when it was time for them to step up to the plate and have kids, they'd break that chain of negativity and pay it forward by doing something good for their family to make up for what they didn't have. But as the years went on, I realized that this was much more of an epic work and it had a much greater significance to just the father-son story. It was really about how our family survived this horrific event. And it's something that people say, well, how'd you get over it? Well, you don't get over it. It's something you can only learn to live with as best you can. It's a badge that becomes emblematic of who you are. And to me, it's what you do with that experience that you either pay it forward and do something with it, as I've done for years with the book and interviews and everything else, or you don't do anything with it and you just kind of lose the opportunity to do something for somebody else of benefit. So I don't know if that answers the question in its entirety.
Right, right. But, it surely does. So you mentioned that you were, I believe you were 16 when your brother committed suicide?
That's correct. He was 22.
Now, how
was
old was your brother?
He was 22.
Now, were you very close with this? This is your older brother. I imagine this was somebody that you looked up to. Did you have a close relationship with him?
I had a very close relationship with both he and my eldest brother, who was 3 years older than Bruce. But Bruce and I were 6 years apart, but it was like we were peas in a pod. I mean, we were as close as two people could be.
So did you have
taught me
any
how to...
clue? Did your family have any clue about your brother's emotional state of being at that time? Were there any signs?
No, there were no signs. He seemed to be, you know, overtly happy and carefree. The only thing we can attribute it to that we could see visibly was that his unit was about to be shipped off to Vietnam, but we don't even know if that was what was going on. You know, with the visions of kids coming back in body bags and limbless from the war all over
right.
the television, it could make anybody freak out. But we don't know. We don't know. There was no sign. There was no note. There was nothing. No indication that anything was askew.
You know, Carl, as a father of six children myself, currently I've got 10 kids in my house right now with various foster children, but I cannot imagine the grief and the guilt and the overwhelming emotions that would just come over me if a child of mine had taken their life. How did your mother and father respond to this?
Well, my mother had just gotten out of the hospital after having surgery, and it blindsided her. And my father was in a state of shock. He's the one who found him. He actually took his life in our gallery up on the third or fourth floor. It's still a vague memory of mine. I didn't see it, and I don't want to see it. But we kind of all lived at that point to protect each other. My parents were very protective of my other brother and myself. And Alan and I were protective of my parents, so for a while we didn't really talk about it. We just kind of held each other and worked our way through the emotions, which, I mean, we were thrust into a state of darkness instantly, and quite honestly, we didn't know how we were going to get out of it. We'd never had an experience like that before. I mean, we've lived through things, illnesses and whatnot, but nothing quite so permanent and shocking. So what we all wound up doing after a while was getting professional help. I had the benefit of a psychoanalysis, which basically saved my life. My parents had the benefit of psychiatric help and clergy as well to help them through, you know, with a spiritual bent. And
right.
Alan, my eldest brother also, he went and he got help too. You can't do it without getting help. This thing is such an intimidating beast that it's impossible and it's insurmountable to do this and overcome it on your own.
Sure, sure. So did this affect your relationship with your father? Did the father-son relationship change after this happened?
I guess we grew even a little bit closer because we had to fill the gap. And
right.
my father became a little more protective, you know, of Alan and I. And we, it took a while for my father's smile to come back. I mean, it really took a while. He kind of ate himself up initially, and it was only a few years later that he really began to try and get his life back again. This is a wound that does not go away. You know, you can only learn to live with it as best you can. But, our relationship was ever closer.
Now, you mentioned that your father passed away years afterwards, after your brother committed suicide. Do you think the two are related in some fashion?
Absolutely. I think that my father's life was shortened by the loss of a son. I can't even fathom an experience like that. I don't ever want to. There's no way you can equate the reality of such a situation like that unless you've gone through it. And it's horrific. So I can only imagine, you know, what my father had gone through. I mean, I'm a parent and I've got, you know, we've got two sons and they're our life's blood.
Right.
More important than anything in the world.
Right, right. So was writing this book for you, was it healing at all? Was it cathartic in a sense?
It was cathartic. It was very difficult to do. It took me decades to write it, and I would write it for a while and put it down. My wife would say to me, you know, if it's too painful, don't do it. You know, leave it alone. And I would come back and say, no, I have to. I'm the kind of person that if I start something, I've got to finish it. And this was really a very important thing for me to do. And it wasn't for me, but it was for everybody else. I needed to put this out there. So at one point she said, you know, I'm not getting it. I'm not feeling anything that you're writing. You're intellectualizing. And if I don't get it, your readers aren't going to get it. So I said, okay, you know, I know what I've got to do. And I had to go back, and I really had to dig into my feelings and let the tears flow and, relive the pain, basically, to make it authentic. And I did.
Right.
And that's when I knew it really came to life.
Was that a difficult process for you?
It was a very difficult process for me. I didn't want to look at this horror, you know, again. And it's the kind of thing that every time the anniversary of my brother's death comes up every year, in fact, it's this Wednesday, it's 50 years, and it's like yesterday.
Wow.
And it, you know, for the longest time, I said, you know, I don't want to face this anymore. I don't want to feel the pain. I'm not going to acknowledge it. Well,
sure.
Guess what? The emotional body will not let you get away with that. You're going to pay. You're going to feel your feelings because the emotional body runs the physical body. No two ways about it. So until I really learned to come to grips with it and feel it and let it flow through me and let it out, it would literally make me sick. So it's the kind of thing that you really have to feel. And, yeah, it's painful. And, you know, and going back and rewriting all this stuff, and I had to do it again because when I got a publisher, she said, we want to publish it. We just want you to do one thing. We want you to rewrite it movie style. And all I heard was movie, and I got really excited. I said, okay, great, because I really want to have a film made from this book because the visual impact I think would be stunning and positively inspirational. So then I said, well, what's movie style? And she said, we want you to show it, not tell it. And they gave me an editor who showed me how to do it, not tell it. They wanted dialogue. And then the book really came to life, and the characters came to life.
Right. Now, you mentioned earlier suicide statistics, a million a year. Can you give us some insight in some of the statistics about suicide?
Absolutely. I mean, worldwide, and this is only based on 2014 statistics, which are really not even current. It's the 10th leading cause of death in the United States for all ages. And I believe there are more deaths by suicide than there are from homicide and breast cancer combined.
Wow.
There are also one a day in the military and about 22 to 23 per day among veterans, which is, again, a staggering statistic. And one of the reasons I have this book out there and why I do these interviews is to raise awareness to the issue of suicide. I feel like Schindler, you know, maybe I could have saved one more.
Right.
It's just such a tough thing, you know, and it's tough to do these interviews, but if I don't do them, I lose the opportunity to maybe save a life or help somebody who's been through it so they'll know that we do survive. It's tough and you don't get over it, but you do survive. Life goes on and life is for the living.
Carl, you said something earlier in the interview that really touched me. Pay it forward. What's that?
I'm sorry.
You pay it forward. You say you want to pay it forward. So what is it that you hope to do when readers finish this book, when they put this book down, what do you hope they get from it?
I hope they get inspiration, and I hope to see what this kind of act can do to a family and the surviving friends that are left behind. And I'm hoping that someone who might be thinking about taking their life gets a hard dose of reality and says to themselves, you know what, I'm not alone. There is help out there. I'm loved. I'm going to give this a try, and I'm going to choose to live instead of choosing to die. And that's basically the premise of what I'm trying to do. I'm trying to reach out and inspire people to choose to live instead of choosing to die, because no matter how bad things look, tomorrow's another day. We get a rewrite. We get a chance to do it over again, and you have no right to throw that away. I mean, it's not fair to everybody else around you.
Carl, I'll be honest with you. There was a time in my life, 24, 25 years ago, where I considered suicide for a brief time. So many people do. So many people, at some point, it's a fleeting thought in their mind. Carl, have you ever considered suicide in your life, or did the suicide of your brother just completely scare you away from it, so to speak?
Well, I never really had thought about it. I'm a pretty happy guy, and you know, everybody goes through tough times. We've all had darkness in our life and losing friends and losing family members when you think that tomorrow is not going to be any better than today. But no, you know, I've never had that experience or the thought. I understand it. People get depressed, and there are lots of reasons why people take their life. Sometimes they can't control what's going on in their own depression, and that's a big cause. But I have not had that experience, and the fact that, you know, my brother took his life would certainly, if I had ever had that, would certainly have cured me of any thoughts like that. Life's too short as it is, and it really is a gift, and every day we get up, we're lucky.
Amen to that.
And, you know, the thing that people need to know is that they're not alone. And when they have these thoughts, they're also not alone. There are a lot of people out there that have suicidal thoughts and are depressed. But if the awareness is there that they're not alone and there's help for them and that there's no stigma, you know, like the depression like there was back in the 1960s, I think they would have a better outlook on life and at least give it a chance to get better.
So, Carl, you had your brother committed suicide when you were 16 years of age, and you watched your family come to grips with that, and you watched it eat up your father. As a parent now, what would you say to your fellow parents who have had a child commit suicide? You've been able to witness what it did to your own father. What would you say to those parents today who are faced with the grief of the loss of their own child?
Well, I've actually spoken to some parents who have gone through that. I've been asked, you know, through some of these interviews to connect with some people who have lost a child, and it's very difficult. Number one, you can never cast judgment on someone who's taken their life, let alone their family members. I've been through it where I've had the looks in the hallways in school, and I went back with, like, you know, that's the kid whose brother killed himself. And, you know, whether those looks were real or they were imagined, they're there. And I have spoken with parents and you know, sympathized and let them know that I've gone through it, not as a parent, but as a child, a brother, and watched my parents go through it. And I do everything I can to let them know that this is a really tough journey, but that they've got to live on for each other and for the child that they've lost, because they're still with them in spirit, and that doesn't change. And I think it's really important that they know that they need to live their lives, painful as it is, and it's going to take a long time, and if they never get over it, they only learn to you know, wear this internally and deal with it when the feelings come up, but that they're not alone.
Now, Carl, you mentioned in the interview earlier that your brother committed suicide in your father's art gallery, and you've mentioned that you have not been back in that room. Is that correct?
Well, no, I've been there, but, you know, I've got this blind spot in my head. I don't know whether it was on the third floor or the fourth floor, and, you know, I was never really told specifically, and that was fine because, you know, had I known specifically where this happened, I probably would not even want to go up there anymore, and I have to. It's part of our business.
I'm sure. Yeah, absolutely. I would imagine so. Carl, did your brother leave behind? Was he married? Did he have any children? Did he have a girlfriend at the time?
He had a girlfriend. Yeah, he had lots of girlfriends. At that time, he was involved with somebody, and no kids. He wasn't married. No, I mean, you know, he was in what we thought was a pretty good relationship. And beyond that, I don't really know.
Do you remember the moment that you found out that your brother committed suicide? Do you remember where you were and when it happened?
Oh, yeah. I got called out of the school auditorium in the morning at 8 o'clock that there was an emergency. I had to go home. And, you know, gracefully, they didn't tell me what it was, and I walked in the door. I had driven to school that day, and in 3 minutes, I was back home. And as soon as I opened up the door, Alan, my oldest brother, was standing there, and he looked at me and he said, "Bruce killed himself."
Mm.
You know, that's hard to take.
Oh, I'm sure. And what do you say? What do you say to that? Oh, my goodness. The book is called Battlefield, How My Family Survived Suicide. Carl, how can we buy this book? Where can people purchase this book at?
Well, Bader Field was an airport outside of Atlantic City, which has since closed in 2006. My dad and I used to fly in and out of there, and that's the last place I saw my father, so that's why I titled it that. It's available on Amazon. It's available the Apple iBookstore, Kobo, Nook, Kindle. I mean, if you just do a search for Bader Field by Carl David, it'll come up in a myriad of places, and you can buy it. It's not in the stores, but you can buy the soft copy online, and I don't know if it's $15, $16, something like that, or you can download it to the Kindle or your iPad or, you know, any of those things for, I think it's like $9.99, and it's a great read. I mean, you know, it sounds like a depressing book, but it's not. I mean, the awareness and the closeness that we all had as a family continues on. And the fact that we had this bump in the road, which is a pretty serious bump, is just something that, you know, I've now used to pay forward and help other people.
It's a fantastic, fantastic message, Carl. I have no doubt that you're touching many people out there. Carl, how can people get a hold of you if they want to get in touch with you?
My Gmail is the easiest way. It's carledavid@gmail.com, CarleDavid @gmail.com. You can always do a search for Carl David, David Gallery, My website is carledavid.com. It's being rebuilt. It's only up until about the 15th of this month, and then we're going to have a dramatic rebuild, but it will be available hopefully within a month under the same www.carledavid.com. And I'm available. I mean, our gallery number is 215-735-2922. If anybody is on that edge or needs help or needs direction or wants to talk, I'm always available. I mean, it's the least I can do, and just hope everybody listening out there knows that if they've got a problem, there is a solution, and it's not suicide. Suicide is a permanent solution to a temporary problem. Just don't do it. Please get help.
Fantastic message, David. Thank you so much for joining us. I encourage all to check out this book. What a great, great message. Again, Carl David, thank you for joining us. We'll be back after these messages.
We'll be back with Parrot Factors and Dr. John right after these messages.
Greetings. My name is Daniel Heimpel, and I'm the publisher of The Chronicle of Social Change, an online news site covering child welfare and juvenile justice. Be sure to check out our money and business section, which includes a huge database of youth services funding opportunities from private foundations and all levels of government. Thanks for taking a look at chronicleofsocialchange.org.
Now there is a book available for children coming into foster care. The book is called A Different Home, A New Foster Child Story. Written in simple language and fully illustrated in color, this storybook is designed to help children in care or moving into care to settle in and answer some of their sensitive questions. Accompanied by notes for adults on how to use the story with children, it will be a useful book for foster parents and caseworkers, as well as social workers, teachers, and anyone else working with children in foster care. A Different Home, A New Foster Child Story, available at Amazon and where all books are sold.
Did you know there are more than 400,000 children in foster care? Foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers stand in the gap for these children, and they need support too. The National Foster Parent Association has been the voice of foster, adoptive, and kinship caregivers for more than 40 years, advocating for thousands of families who open their heart and homes to children in need. Learn more about NFPA at www.nfpaonline.org or call 1-800-557-5238.
Did you ever wish there was a manual for foster parents? Well, now there is. This manual is a comprehensive guide offering proven, friendly advice for novice and experienced parents alike. Distilling many years' experience into one book, U.S. foster and adoptive parent John DeGarmo combines his own hard-won wisdom with that of fellow foster parents. He describes what to expect from the process, how to access help and support, and how to ensure the best care for your child. The Foster Parenting Manual, available now in stores and at Amazon.com.
And now back to Dr. John and Parent Factors.
And welcome back to the show, Parent Factors with Dr. John. And on the phone now from the great state of Alabama, we have Buddy Hooper with the National Foster Parent Association and this week's NFPA News and Notes. Buddy, welcome back to the program.
It's good to be back, Dr. John.
I appreciate it. So the last I saw you was in June at the big NFPA conference.
Yes, in Virginia.
Right, right. And that was a fantastic conference.
And that is one time a year that the Council of State Affiliates, and we also meet in November. I am chair of the Council of State Affiliates for NFPA. The Council of State Affiliates is composed of all the state organizations around the country who belong to the state affiliates. There is a process by which they can become a member. And so we meet in November and June each year.
Now, what's coming up with, you know, I hear a lot of things about, in fact, I had emailed earlier today. Somebody asked me about they're considering becoming foster parents, and they're asking me about the opportunity to have a babysitter. And I was telling them, well, there are some new rules in various states regarding foster parenting. Can you tell us a little bit about what's going on new with the NFPA? What is the National Foster Parent Association focusing on this time of year?
Well, I think what you're referring to is the new policies being put into effect, and the NFPA has been an organization that has push for more normalcy for foster children.
Right.
And a lot of states are making legislative actions to coincide with the public law that was passed last year, and that will enable foster parents to make more decisions about taking care of their foster children. And one of those is using babysitters or getting babysitters for their children.
Absolutely right. Yeah, and that's which is, as a foster parent myself, I can say to you, hallelujah. Won't that be nice to be able to finally go out with my wife on a date to get a babysitter? That's great news. Yes, it's very exciting. What other new things are the NFPA hoping to change perhaps late this year or in 2016?
Well, there are many things we're looking to. We have just recently talked about opening it up for adult adoptees to get their records. The National Foster Parent has promoted, and so we're hoping more states will adopt that position in their own states.
Why would that be a benefit? Why do you think that would be a benefit, buddy, to have the children placed with relatives?
Why is there a benefit to have children placed with relatives?
Right. How would
that
benefit?
Was that the question?
Yes. How would that benefit the child?
Well, that is the goal. Anytime a child is placed in foster care is to return them home if at all possible, and if not, then place with a relative. And that is the goal of every when a child comes into foster care is to place them back with a relative if possible.
Right.
But as you know, that's not always possible. That's why we need many, many foster parents.
Yes. There's not enough foster parents out there, are there?
There are not enough foster parents, and that is, I'm glad you mentioned that, because that is another goal of National Foster Parent, is to help each state come up with ways to recruit more foster parents.
So, buddy, if someone was listening to the program this week and has never been a foster parent, but they're thinking to themselves, what do I need to do to become a foster parent, or why should I become a foster parent? What would you say to them?
Well, the easiest thing to do is to call your state agency to get more information. But you can also call the NFPA toll-free number, and they can help you with that. And that I heard before I came on, I heard that number was given out, 800-557-5238. And they can call to get more information on becoming a foster parent within their own state. And that's what I was alluding to. We have state representatives in each state that can also assist.
Right.
I happen to be the president of the Alabama Foster Parent Association. We have many strong foster parent associations around the country. And we all, like I say, we come together as a group in November and June each year to discuss what's going on in each state and how each state can kind of help each other with problems that they might be having in, say, Tennessee. Tennessee
right.
could get information from how we're doing it in Alabama and
right.
to
Absolutely.
Help them.
Buddy, we're going to have to cut it there. We're running out of time. Thank you so much for being part of the program this week. And thank you. I know you work tirelessly and hard, not only for the foster parents and the children in foster care in your state of Alabama, but the entire nation as well. So I want to thank you. I also want to thank our wonderful guest this week, Carl David, for telling us a little bit about his brand-new book, Baderfield, a book that has a fantastic message about suicide, a very, very powerful message about suicide. So I encourage each of you to check out that book. Okay, we have run out of time this week with Parent Factors with Dr. John. We will have a brand new show next week, a brand new guest. Hope you join us there. Remember, hug your child close, hug your child deep. The love you can give a child is never strong enough. This has been Parent Factors. Until next week, I bid you cheers.
We'll be back with Parent Factors and Dr. John right after these messages.
Next week. We'll see you next week.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.